Blog Talk Radio.
A great big dip of a lard from a two-pence can, throw it in the skillet, I do my shopping in me back porch, melt in the pan, cause I'm a woman, W-O-M-A-N. Let me tell you again, I'm a
good evening, everyone, and welcome to Women Patriots. Tonight, we're just going to talk a little bit about this and that and everything and anything you'd like to talk about. Our number is 718-305-7176. I encourage you all to give us a call. We're going to talk a little bit about the elections. Not a whole lot of unexpected stuff going on there at the moment. We do have some results reporting in that Romney will win the Kinetic primary with 41.6 reporting. He's at 66.6% of the vote, with Ron Paul in second place with about 14%, Newt Gingrich at 11%, and Rick Santorum at 7% in Connecticut. In Delaware, we have Mitt Romney with 93.2% reporting at 56.3%. Newt Gingrich at 27%, Ron Paul at 11%, Rick Santorum at 6%. New York polls are soon just now closing, so there's nothing in coming in from New York. Pennsylvania, there's 11.2% reporting. They have Mitt Romney at 57.1%. Have not called this one for some reason, and I'm not real sure why. So we'll kind of keep an eye on that one, see what's going on there, see what comes in from New York. Be very surprising, you know, if Mitt Romney doesn't pick that win up in New York City. But one of the things I kind of want to talk tonight's show is about the separation of church and state, because I get this all the time, and I get it in blogs, and you see people. Some guy was saying he didn't want to listen to our prayers or our preaching or just some inane comment like that, that it was his right not to have to listen to that. And we have gone so far wrong in this country from what our founding fathers and the Constitution actually has said. There is no separation of church and state in the Constitution. It's not there, folks. You won't find it there. I know we've talked about this many times before. The term actually comes from a letter that was rewritten maybe three or four times by Thomas Jefferson before he sent it out to the Banbury Baptists. It was in a reply to a letter from the Banbury Baptists that they were concerned they would be persecuted for practicing their religion, that they felt like the Constitution didn't protect us enough. And apparently they were right, because, you know, in the later rulings in 1947 and on from there, when they started ruling against prayer in schools and those kind of things, the Constitution apparently didn't be specific enough. But what also is just mind-boggling is how they try to change history to make it that our founding fathers didn't practice religion and didn't believe in religion and didn't think religion had any place in the government. And this is just total nonsense, because Thomas Jefferson attended services in the government buildings, as did Madison. And George Washington had days of fasting and days of prayer, which Jefferson refused to do that. He felt, you know, that his religion was between a man and God. So he wouldn't go that far as to trying to make everybody, you know, say, oh, we're going to have this day of fasting, day of prayer. But other presidents did, even Abraham Lincoln. Okay. So to come out today and say that prayer has no place in schools or in buildings, the Ten Commandments, we have founding fathers' quotes that talk about the Ten Commandments being something on which this country should be founded on. I just have a few quotes here I want to read to you before we go on. Maybe if I can see. Okay, hang on. But it says, well, first of all, we'll take it we're going to take it with this Occupy Wall Street and this taxes on the rich first, because Thomas Jefferson has said, and the democracy will cease to exist when you take away from those who are willing to work and give to those who would not. Thomas Jefferson, okay? A simple, basic understanding. Last week I talked about Benjamin Franklin and how he saw that when you gave things to the poor that they wouldn't work for themselves. And so these things were going on years ago, and the observations made by our founding fathers, have we learned nothing from history? Or do we just choose to rewrite that history into something that it wasn't in the beginning? Also, here we have, history will also afford frequent opportunities showing the necessity of a public religion and the excellency of the Christian religion above all others, ancient or modern. This is Benjamin Franklin, written in the works of Benjamin Franklin, in 1787. So even though they didn't advocate a government religion, they advocated a public religion. And this is, you know, I'm sorry, it does not actually violate your rights by the Constitution to hear me say a prayer out loud. The Constitution doesn't guarantee the right for you to not hear something offensive. It guarantees freedom of religion and freedom of speech. So if you don't want to hear my prayer, plug your ears or put some cotton in them. I don't care. But you have no right guaranteed by the Constitution, whereas I, if I so choose to pray in public and out loud at a public event, have been given that right by our founding fathers and by their example and by the Constitution. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court went way beyond its means when they ruled in some of these cases. Okay, and I have another quote here, and this is from attributed to James Madison, who was also one of our founding fathers and one of our leading men of this nation. We have staked the whole future of America's civilization not upon the power of government, not upon the power of government. Far from it, we have staked the future of all of our political institutions upon the capacity of mankind of self-government, upon the capacity of each and all of us to govern ourselves, to control ourselves, and to sustain ourselves according to the Ten Commandments of God. John Adams, statesmen may plan and speculate for liberty, but it is religion and morality alone that can establish the principles upon which freedom can securely stand. Again, John Adams, but a constitution of government once changed from freedom can never be restored. Liberty, once lost, is lost forever. That is a warning, folks. That is a warning then, and it's a warning to us now. But, you know, it's just amazing to me that, you know, they're removing Ten Commandments from buildings, saying, oh, it's not constitutionally. And yet our founding fathers, those who were involved in the writing process of the Constitution, refer to the Ten Commandments as something that we should be following. And they talk about morality and religion. And I'm going to tell you, folks, there is no right guaranteed to you in the Constitution that you don't have to hear my prayer in public. And that's all I got to say on that matter. As you can see, I just kind of get really kind of heated up about that, because we've gone so far wrong in this country. Coming in now, Pennsylvania is being called for Mitt Romney with 14% reporting. He's at 56.8%, Rick Santorum at 19%, Ron Paul at 14%, Newt Gingrich at 10%. New York, nothing reporting in yet. And I do have a caller on the line, so I'm going to go see who this is. Who do I have at 817?
Hi, it's Michael.
Hi, Michael. How are you?
I'm good. How's it going, buddy?
It's going all right. It's going pretty good.
I'd call and listen to my favorite ladies.
Ah, yes. Well, Billy had to drop for a minute because apparently her power went out. We were chatting before the show started, and she lost power. But hang on a second.
Well, it's fine. I just got home. I just thought I'd call in and maybe say a word or two.
Okay. And 712.
Everybody's my whole neighborhood is out of power. I called my power company trying to find out what is going on.
Uh-oh.
And it's like Everybody in the neighborhood is out of power right now. We don't know what happened.
No storms or nothing?
No, it's not even. It's a beautiful day out here. We're outside. I'm doing my report from outside today.
Must have been an accident or something at one of the stations or something.
I just don't have a computer to look at or the studio to go to.
Okay. All right. Well, that's fine. We got Michael B. on the phone line.
Hey, Michael. Wonderful.
Hey, Billy. What's up, buddy?
I've missed you. I tried calling you Sunday, and I didn't get through.
Oh, Sunday. What was I doing Sunday? I was probably preparing for my show.
Yeah, Zach and some other guy, Brian Cahill.
Yeah, Brian Cahill from Connecticut and Zach Postkiss from Tennessee. And, you ladies know pretty much I just, you know, it's y'all shows and don't interfere. And I'm so busy doing my own thing. But I was driving home this evening and it's primary night I looked at my Facebook and I saw the thing for tonight and I was driving home and of course I'm home now and I thought, you know, I'm going to call in and touch base with my ladies, see how y'all are doing. Because we've not talked since Rick, we've not spoken in verbally to one another. I mean, we've communicated, mm-hmm. but since Rick suspended just wanted to see how you girls were doing and, give you a report where I'm at.
Yeah, last time I looked at the polls before I got my electricity turned off, and it wasn't, I mean, everybody's power's out. It's amazing. But it just is. It's really, I mean, me and the neighbors are shouting across the street, what's going on?
Brenda, awesome intro, Brenda. I couldn't agree with you more. You know, if someone doesn't like our prayers, they can change the channel, can't they?
Absolutely. Or plug your ears. Or just, you know, hum in your head. Do anything you want to, but, you know, I have that right.
That's the responsibility that comes with freedom of choice.
Right.
And that, yes, that's exactly where Reagan came off saying, vote with your feet. If you don't like one state's policies, move to another state.
Right.
Absolutely right.
You know, and that's like, you know, these things. And my sister and I, we had this big argument the other day about equal pay for women and stuff. And I was just like, you know what? If a woman thinks she's being treated unfairly at a job, find another job.
Yeah.
That's going to treat you fairly.
Yeah.
You know? We seem to have become a society that wants equal opportunity for outcomes as opposed to equal opportunity for opportunity. And we've gotten skewed as a society. I think we've become a McDonald's society, you know, the Pepsi generation, if you will. It's all about me. And you know, we seem to forget that with freedom comes responsibility. If you don't like what I'm saying, don't deny me my freedoms to say it. Turn the damn channel.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's called taking responsibility.
Yes, because we listen to them. You know, we listen to them all the time telling us what to think and what to do and how hateful we are and what bigots and racists we are. And we have to take that, you know, but they can't.
Well, we can equally walk away from
it
because we know it's ignorant.
Yeah. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah. Well, I was just, you know, it's just amazing. And you know, I guess, you know, the three of us, I was going to tell y'all after my show on Sunday with Zach in particular, Postvich, for Tennessee's running against Bob Corker. Melissa Wendo, y'all probably remember her from, I can't pronounce her last name, but she's his field director, and she friended me, and she put me on his page. And lo and behold, I bumped back into Scott Osborne and Scott Whiting. Now, there's some names from the past, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
They're both doing well. And, you know, with everything that's happened, of course, I'm not getting in behind any other presidential candidate now. And I think y'all know where I'm going as far as the grassroots conservative effort goes.
Right.
But,
oh, yeah.
I just kind of wanted to tell y'all how my last Saturday went. You know, we had two foil conventions here in Texas on Saturday.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, the three of us, we've been together since last summer now. It's hard to believe it's been almost a year or going on a year. But we had our senatorial conventions, and I made mine, and I'm a state delegate. And, of course,
woo-hoo!
My primary
cool.
vote and my delegate vote will still be for Santorum. You know, there's nothing – there would be nothing more great than delivering Texas to Senator Santorum. I don't know that that'll happen at this point. I think the conventional wisdom now is for most people, unlike us, not what I mean is people that don't do what we do, that are not as involved as we are, just
right.
your general voting public, it is okay. Well, my choice now is Romney, and it's not going to matter who else is on the ballot. But we don't know how that's going to play out. But wouldn't it just be wonderful if a state like Texas would still deliver Texas to Senator Santorum? The trembles it would send throughout the GOP. Right now I'm so angry with and so mad with, but I'm not going to give up. And this is why I'm not going to give up, because Saturday at our convention, I learned a whole lot. I walked out of that convention at 5:30 after doing several things, part of which was battle, and I learned so much. And ladies, you know what I learned the most? Grassroots, the grassroots effort, it's more than just pushing the message of our candidate, which is a very important part of it. But it's and you both have done it, you know, and this is the point that I'm really trying to push to everybody that I can now. It's about going to your convention, because you know what I learned? I learned that we're only going to make change if we get into our GOP conventions, get on our committees, be it resolution, primary organization, or nominations, and start getting people that are like-minded, like us, in those right. positions to get rid of these rhinos. And I think the thing that I learned that taught that to me the best was an incident that happened a Ron Paul supporter ended up on the resolutions committee, and they tried – I'm not going to read verbatim the whole resolution that they tried to get through on us, but it was so offensive to me. That I couldn't sit there and just vote no on it. I had to get up and speak, and you both know how passionate a person I am, and you know can tear up at the drop of a dime. And mm-hmm. sure enough, I got up, walked up to that microphone with tears in my eyes, and I had a tremble in my voice. I know I did. I know I had to sound like I was on the verge of crying. I was so angry and so mad about this resolution. It had to hand Dr. Paul all over it, and uh-huh. and told my fellow Republicans this has to be stricken. This can't be passed. We have to vote this down. We have to vote this down because we're not an isolationist country, and we're not an isolationist party. You know, we're a party that takes our responsibility very seriously in the world, and that wars aren't wars of choice. Wars about right and wrong, and I'm not going to go into the details there. Anybody can read my blog and get the details on that. I posted it today. But I won that battle. I was so pleased, you know, as I walked back to my seat, and there was a thundering round of applause around me from the other Republicans there, with the exception of maybe a dozen. And it got voted down. And in part, it got voted down because someone got up and spoke up and said, this is not right. This is wrong. And I learned from that lesson. Yes. And I learned from that lesson, Brenda, Billy, I learned that we have, you know, I think if we've learned nothing else from the Ron Paul folks this year, we've learned that 4 years ago they knew where to get themselves. And that's mm-hmm. where they're at.
Yes.
That's what we have to do now. And we have to
right.
prepare for 4 years from now. I've not seen the returns. I just walked in. I was listening to Mark Levin on the ride home and then called you ladies. Some lady called from Orange County, New York. She said by 3 p.m. this afternoon, only 12 people had voted. 12 people,
Isn't
ladies.
That disgusting? That's just
I know.
What does that say? What does
That's
that say about
problem.
Our presumptive nominee?
Exactly.
Doesn't say much.
Exactly.
But, you know, it's also, hopefully it's going to be good for the conservatives that are running for Senate seats and House seats, I don't know. But, you know, it's ridiculous. I couldn't believe it. It's just ridiculous that, well, number one, I mean, people died so that we could have this right to vote.
And people die across the route every day for the fighting to get the right to be able to vote and pick their leaders. And yet we don't care enough to even walk out the door. And my voting center is just like a block away, two blocks away. I mean, come on, you know, you can't take 15, 20 minutes out of your day to go cast a vote. It's so unimportant to you. I mean, there's
it doesn't even take
really
that long.
Wrong with that? Well, it depends if there's a line. Now, the 2008, we did have to wait in line, but usually we just walk right in and walk right out. But
right.
But yeah, I'm going to check. We have a caller here at 410. I'm going to see who that is.
Hey, ladies, okay. I'm going to bow out. I'm going to put you on. I'm going to fire up my computer and put you on and listen. I've got a blog. I need to do some brush up on one of my candidates that I'm supporting here locally. Is messaging me, so I've got some work to do, but I'm going to listen in. Ladies, I can't thank you enough for what you're doing. I do. I know I don't check in enough with you, but you know I love you both.
Yeah, Michael, you take care and keep up the good work.
You're welcome on
Abomination,
too.
No, come at any time, so we're always
all right, ladies.
Love you. Take care.
All right, guys. I love you. Bye.
Bye.
Who do we have at 410?
Hi, my name is Corey.
Hi, Corey.
I live in Maryland. And this is sort of a different subject, but I was this just passed in Maryland. I was wondering what your opinion on same-sex marriage is, because it just passed in Maryland a month or two ago, and it's going to be going to a petition, and then it's going to be on referendum. So I'm wondering.
Well, Brenda, I'd like to take that one.
Go for it, Billy.
Because well, I'll take it first. You can elaborate on what I have to say. Is same-sex marriages are becoming more and more frequent, but that's only because back in the 70s, one stray psychologist decided to say being gay is no longer a mental illness. It's now a born right. And all of a sudden, now everyone who is gay is no longer treated for the mental illnesses they really do have. And they are trying to, in my world, in my idea of what I see around me, being in Iowa, the first state that ever did legalize same-sex marriage with some activist judges, they are becoming more and more rampant in believing that marriage is a right rather than what I call a natural right given to us by God. And that was a right long before we had a constitution, long before America was ever America. That was between a man and a woman, and it was spelled out long, long, long ago. Now all of a sudden, the means to trying to institute communism and socialism in our land, they're going right down the list of rules on what it takes. And one of the things is to make everyone basically feel sorry for people who are homosexual, not getting or basically feeling bigoted and hated, even though they're not hated. I don't hate gay people. I don't. I don't think that they have the right to destroy an institution like marriage, though, by saying it's to be
kind of constitutional right. It's not guaranteed under the Constitution. It's not
right.
There.
Well, no, it's just that, you know, and this is a very religious perspective. Mine comes directly from my religious values. And I know that God, who created man and woman to be married as man and woman, husband and wife, destroyed cities, whole cities, over this kind of act, and it's a perverse, abomination, disgusting act in the eyes of God. And to me, that in and of itself declares where same-sex marriage is in his eyes. And if he doesn't bless it, then how could anyone really say that it's something that belongs in our society?
Right. And I want to point out that Billy said act. We don't find the people despicable, but it's the act that is actually the sin in God's eyes. And that's from a spiritual perspective. But God's the one, marriage is an institution of God, okay? And God's the one that said it was between a man and woman. Government has no business legislating it. This is just, and Billy mentioned the agenda. If you go on it, Corey, I don't know if you're familiar with it. There is a communist agenda. It was written, first exposed in 1958 in a book called The Naked Communist, pages 184 to 186. It was entered into the Congressional Record in 1963. In the Congressional Record, you can type in communist list. On that list is promoting gay lifestyle as normal behavior. And that's what they're doing, and they're continuing. If you go back to our founding fathers, sodomy was a crime. These people would not have been living then. They would not have been allowed to live. So I know very well they have no right guaranteed under the Constitution. But it's just a matter of people in our country have gotten to the point where they think that anything they want to do should be okay. And when you get to that point of no responsibility and anything I want to do is okay, it's all about me and mine, you have a problem. And that's where we are today. So we have a serious problem in this country.
So,
go ahead, Corey.
I respect that view, and I, if that's what you believe, I have no problem with that. But what I would like to ask is, do you both consider yourself, I guess, pro-liberty? Would you both agree with saying that you're both pro-liberty?
Absolutely.
I am pro-freedom with responsibility. I don't believe that
everything.
I believe that with liberty comes responsibility, and to maintain that liberty, you have to fight and you have to maintain responsibility. You don't have the right to do just whatever you want. I don't believe that.
Well, see what the second. I'm sorry, I don't know your name. So the second.
No,
post,
I'm Brenda, and the other one's Billy.
I'm Billy.
Hi, Corey. So,
hi.
Yeah,
see, my mom
ahead.
Had the right to name me a boy's name too. So,
yeah. I think what you said about you don't have the right to do whatever you want to do. You were you the second person who spoke about this?
Yeah,
that was
me.
Okay. To me, it seems like, you know, you're allowed to have whatever moral judgment on a person that you'd like. That's fine. But to me, it seems like if we were to start telling people they can't, they can't be gay, that's like the almost, I mean, how much more invasive can you get?
Well, they were told that for years, Corey, because it was never accepted behavior up until somewhere in the 1900s, I'm sure, because even in other countries, you know, in England and France, they used to put people to death for these kind of things. So, you know, it's not my morality. I mean, it's basically, I don't want to impose my morality. I mean, I get a lot of my basis does come from morality, but by the same token, don't be telling my children that it's okay. You see, because then you're infringing on
I agree with that.
My beliefs. See, so
right.
That's where we have problems, you know. And
right.
I am a nurse, and I have taken care of patients with AIDS back in the 90s when, you know, homosexuality wasn't so accepted, but I had AIDS patients in my hospice care, and I didn't treat them any bit differently than I would any of my patients, and I don't judge them. You know, I give them, you know, try to give them spiritual comfort, even though my own beliefs would say, you know, well, I'm not so sure about that. You know, I didn't go into a home and say that to a person. You still offer the comfort to them. But, you know, deep in your mind, you have the belief, you know, those of us who do believe in the Bible believe that God is going to condemn that behavior. Now, could I be wrong in the end? Yes, maybe I am.
Absolutely.
But, you know, if I'm not, I'm not going to be someplace very horrible to be, you know, if I'm wrong. But I also believe that we need to love each other and we need to be concerned about each other. But I don't think we have a two-way street between the sides, you know, going on. I think that they're wanting to push their beliefs onto me when I'm content to just let it be, you know.
Yeah, well, I agree. But I see a difference between letting it be and pushing.
Well, let me just
belief.
Ask you, Corey, how old are you?
I'm 20.
How old
I'm
are
20
you?
I'm 20 years old.
Oh, okay.
20, okay. See, you're half my age. So you obviously weren't around when I was 10 years old, and there were psychologists battling each other, telling, you know, that, or talking about how being homosexual was a mental disorder versus this birth, you know, that it's everyone's born that way. Now, it came down to one stray psychologist just saying, no, that's how it is. And then everybody kind of like fell on board. But then all of a sudden today we see the number of homosexuals that actually commit suicide. And everyone in the world says that if you commit suicide, you have a mental disorder. You know, everybody says
but
you got to be crazy to commit suicide.
The suicide would have been caused by depression or depression, it's whatever it is.
Yes, depression is the number one cause of it. However, to even consider it altogether is what they say is a mental disorder as well. And it has nothing to do with depression. It's just that whole idea coming into someone's head. I mean, I can tell you straight out, I've really never considered ending my own life. And some people say, well, everyone has at one point in their life, and I don't believe that. But there are serious mental disorders based on suicide alone. And it's not just depression, but it is the leading cause because of coping. People who can't cope with things.
Go ahead, Corey.
The homosexuality would not be what is causing the suicide. It would be the depression that is associated with it, or the
right. But I think right. What Billy's trying to say is there may be like there may be more than one issue there, you know, from a psychological
right.
standpoint.
That's what I'm
because
saying.
If you've
these
got
people
depression
who
and
are homosexual should
bipolar.
Be seen for psychologists. No matter what, if you're homosexual, I honestly believe you should be seen or find out some sort of mental disorder that could erupt as a token for it. If they believe they're homosexual, you know what? And I'll tell you straight out, another thing I've talked to Brenda about many times is the fact that I believe that some people are homosexual from birth now due to different things that are introduced into the womb causing a higher estrogen level. And it's just that's something that, you know, people today cannot help. They've got this higher estrogen level that really promotes it in their bodies and in their mindsets. And I feel bad that that's happening in this world. I really do. And I can tell you straight out, I've got two children. One of them could end up becoming homosexual based on this kind of stuff. Now, I say becoming because of the people I do know that are homosexual, every single one of them, I don't know a lot. I know about six. And of all of them, they've all said it was a choice. And three of them were married before they were homosexual. And they all say it was a choice. It was something they chose to do due to circumstances before they did that. Now, when it comes down to it, I can also see the point of view where people are saying they were born that way. They always felt different. They always felt attracted to the same sex. That kind of stuff, I think they should have probably seen a psychologist about, but now we've got the psychologist saying there's nothing wrong with you. And we've also got psychologists, if you know today, there's also NAMBLA, if you know about NAMBLA in the world, North American Boy Love, or whatever it is, Man Boy Love. And there's psychologists trying to come out saying that pedophiles are not criminals. Pedophiles have a mental disorder, and they need to be treated for a mental disorder. And that there's something to that whole issue, too, that comes down straight from what Brenda was saying earlier about that communist list, about the list of things that will degrade our nation so much that it comes down to a nation not of facts, not of logic anymore. It's a nation of emotion, feeling sorry for people.
Hang on, guys, real quick, because I want to bring somebody else on the show. I have Thomas coming in, and Corey, he kind of wanted to speak to this issue, too. So, Thomas, you're on the air.
Brenda.
Yeah.
Corey.
Hello, Thomas.
Billy.
This is Billy, yep.
I am going to take a little time, and I'm going to put this debate to rest. Billy, I love you to pieces. You're one of my absolute favorite people, but I have to
tell
you.
I knew there was a but.
You're wrong, and I'm going to tell you how you're wrong. based on scientific evidence.
Go on.
The entire human DNA has been completely, entirely mapped for individuals to be born homosexual. There has to exist what is known as a gay gene or a homosexual gene. The entire human DNA has been mapped, and they never found a gay gene. It doesn't exist.
Oh, I know that.
The scientists who came out with that came out with that, this actually happened in the mid-90s. He came out and said that he had found the existence of the gay gene. On his deathbed, he admitted that he said these things because he was a closet homosexual and he wanted to justify his lifestyle. I said all that to say this. You know what? It's not every. You're right. It's not about the individuals who choose the lifestyle. It is the lifestyle itself. And Corey, it is the lifestyle that leads to the depression, because a lot of people, both men and women, who resort to the homosexual lifestyle, it came from a place of being rejected by society because they were different. And so the truth of the matter is this, is that there is a way out, and I'm not going to go into the whole faith or anything like that, but there is a way out if people choose to embrace that. But at the same time, you can't see homosexuals, people who live the lifestyle and they're fighting for acceptance. They want to say that they're being discriminated against, but at the same time, they don't realize that through their actions and how they actually treat people, i.e., there's a school in New York that will start, that got federal and state funding. It is a all-gay public high school in New York City. And they got in trouble a few years ago because packs of gay male teens were going around beating up straight males just because they could. So, see, it works both ways. So what we need to do is have a true dialogue or true discussion and say, hey, you know what? At the end of the day, if you want to do something that makes you happy, that's fine. But if you expect to be respected, your choices to be respected, you have to respect our right to disagree with the point of view.
Well, see, this is something, Thomas, that I'm going to disagree with you on a little bit, just a little bit. It's not a gay gene. The fact is that since BPHs, they're toxins that are on plastics and other kind of things. Since they've been introduced into the womb, it heightens the estrogen levels in the child sometimes. And what happens is higher estrogen levels have been known to be directly correlated to this whole thing. And it has turned into the idea that this higher estrogen introduced into the womb has been a contributing factor in many of those children when they're children, when they're little, when they're 4 years old and they're acting, you know, in a different manner. That's where I say nowadays, because of this kind of scientific analysis, that there are reasons to believe some people in this world are completely born with so much estrogen in their body that they believe and that they end up being attracted to the same sex, being, you know, more in tuned with the same sex. only and reject the opposite sex. And that is a proven thing. But the thing is, what?
Here's the thing. That would be an accurate, that would be an accurate point of view if it wasn't for the fact that there are medical, there are medical treatments to balance.
Oh, definitely, yes. That's
that
why
out.
I said,
and
but see, Dan,
is,
or I almost called you Daniel,
hold
but
on,
Thomas.
Hold on, Billy. Billy.
Go on.
Billy, hold on. Hold on.
Mm-hmm.
There are medical treatments. One of the ways is that when you have, it's either, if you, because it works both ways, you can have either too much estrogen or too much testosterone. And when you have one or the other, what you do, you introduce maybe a little bit of the other to bring it into balance.
That's what I was going to say, but that's where I was bringing up the whole idea that a lot of people when they first, or actually all homosexuals, when they first believe they're attracted to the same sex and that they're homosexual, should be seeing a mental, some sort of doctor to get that level balanced, is what I'm saying. That's
May
what
I
was
something?
Trying to get at.
Go ahead.
But
go
anyway,
ahead, Corey,
go ahead. I know it sounds like a kooky. This does sound kind of kooky or corny, but it comes down to when you really study the subject and you study the science of what's being said, there are certain things, and then you look at the number of suicides by people who are homosexual compared to any
right.
other group. They're the highest group.
Yes.
Homosexuals commit
yes.
suicide
right.
more than
all
anybody
guys,
else.
We're gonna give Corey some time to speak here. Go ahead, Corey.
Okay. I wanted to first address something that Thomas, I think your name's Thomas, so I apologize if
yes.
I'm getting it wrong. You started with talking about mapping genes. There's to sort of nullify that argument to some extent, there are other parts of people's personality or there are other parts of people's being, their predispositions that can't necessarily be found in the genes. So just scientifically just saying that since there's no gay gene, people can't possibly be born gay isn't necessarily true. It's not definitive. And then your second point was addressing something I said about the suicide. And I agreed with you that the depression comes from something else. You think it's homosexuality. I think it might tend to be the attitude that the people feel because they're gay. Not necessarily the homosexuality itself.
But see, that no matter what, Corey, it comes from inside the person. That person...
Well, everything comes
and
from
inside. But see, hold on 1 second. When it comes down to it, people are trying to tell those who are not gay to not tolerate, but accept and say and welcome everyone who is homosexual
and
say
children,
it's okay.
Where...
But people who have a spiritual argument against it, they are automatically evil in the eyes of society nowadays.
I think you almost just answered what I'm about to ask. Would you agree, whether you think it's a good thing or a bad thing, that your viewpoint is sort of in the minority now? Whether it's a good or bad thing.
No, I don't think
no. I wouldn't say it's in the minority.
I think we're the silent majority, but we're the people that
yes.
you don't hear from because we don't get out in the streets and yell because a lot of us are working, you know, full time jobs and just trying to keep up with our.
I mean. What I'm
you know, bills
is,
and everything. So, but no, it's not. And when they do their polls, Corey, they do their polls in big cities like New York and Los Angeles. And yeah, there it's probably much more prevalent. But if you come here in the mid, I'm from Indiana. Billy's from Iowa. Thomas, you're in
Missouri.
So,
Missouri.
You know, there's a different viewpoint for, depending on what part of the country you're actually in. I went down to Florida, Miami Beach, and I went into, like, culture shock because, you know, it was like I was in a different country from
I'm
where I
that.
Am here in Indiana. So,
well,
you know,
wait a minute. Let me just inform one thing about Corey, what Corey said. like I said, Iowa was the first state to actually say it's okay to get married as a homosexual. However, as soon as the people in Iowa found out that these judges started marrying homosexuals, we booted them out of office. That's how unpopular it is. Uh-huh. And we said no more to these judges. And now they're trying to overturn it.
Where are you at, Corey? Where do you live at?
Just to address the location, I'm in Maryland. I'm like halfway between Baltimore and D.C. in Howard County, right in the center of Maryland.
Of where it's popular.
Well, yeah, it's a pretty liberal area, but
right.
See, the way I grew up, I don't care whether you're gay or straight or whatever. You don't need to tell me if you're gay.
Keep it in your bedroom. Right, Corey? Yeah.
It's your business. It's your own business. I don't care.
But you can't condemn us if you're making out with, or not you personally,
if two guys are
sitting there making out and we walk away from it, we are not evil for walking away.
Oh, no,
whereas
certainly not.
People say,
that's humans
but
are
that's
humans.
What they
They're
say,
going
you
to
have
spend
to accept
two...
it.
Yeah.
Well, I disagree with that, but I think that there's a difference between tolerance and acceptance, first of all.
Right.
And I think we should, tolerate gays, but you don't have to sit and, if they're making out.
Right.
It's fine to get up and walk away. You should tolerate them. But you disagree with what they're doing.
You need to treat them like human beings, because we are all human beings. And
right.
I think that's what you're saying. You need to respect
each other. And there are those who are so
other.
Extreme. Wait, there are those that are so extreme on the right. Yes, I'll grant you. I know a
they
preacher who would sit there and try saying you need to expel the demon and all this other stuff from a homosexual, which I don't think is necessary. If they want to come around, then they'll see the sign and do it themselves. But that's their business, and it's for them to do. It's not something that you or I or anybody else can do for them or tell them to do. They need to, they make their own choices, they make their own bed and lie in it, basically. But the thing that we say on the conservative end, like me and Brenda, like Brenda just said, it needs to stay out of the line sight of our children. Our children do not need to be having a gender classes saying there's not males or females, there's just humans, or there's just people. There's no males, there's no females, and that trying to get gay acceptance in there. And that's what they're trying to
and
push
that, and
in
Corey,
our public
there
school
are actually,
system.
There are actually classes like that out there. And unfortunately, that's what we stand against, is that kind of thing.
Right.
We're just saying don't throw it in our children's eyes saying, hey, this is an option for you. If we parents are saying that, guess what? My children are in a Catholic school, and they are taught man and woman were created to marry. And if they
procreate from marriage,
right,
is what God
exactly.
created them for. So, yes.
But at the same time, we don't need society coming in and trying to dismantle what they're being taught.
Yeah. And Thomas, you had something to say?
Yeah, all I was going to say is that great topic I'm going to take off, but on the issue of tolerance, one thing that I have noticed, and it's not just homosexual groups, it's groups on the left, period. They tend to be the most intolerant group.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
On the face of this earth. Case in point, every atheist group in America works to try to get a symbol, a cross removed, honoring World War II or World War I soldiers.
Cross.
Right. Because it offends their intelligence. But let us say that seeing two homosexuals or two lesbians making out in the middle of the street, or walking down the street, two gay guys walking down the street with no shirt on, or two tooth floss for, clothes on, just prancing, and let us get offended by that. And we're called bigots, racist, and every other name under the sun. There's no
difference. Well, no, case in point is more so the whole Bill Maher, Rush Limbaugh issue of the left. Because
exactly.
Bill Maher can say whatever it is, and everybody says, oh, well, he's a comedian. He can say whatever he wants. Rush Limbaugh says something that actually makes sense, that, hey, someone's saying you need to pay for me to have sex because I'm not going to have sex without birth control. And
right.
Guess what? He calls her a slut when he says it. Guess what? He's damned, and everyone's boycotting everyone who is, you know, advertising on him. And that's ridiculous. And it is our right just as easily to boycott Bill Maher, and that's what the right's starting to rise up and do.
Yes. And what this all speaks to, okay, bottom line is, Corey, and I've seen it, you're not old enough to have seen it yet, but back, you know, when I was a child, even married people on TV had separate beds, like the I Love Lucy show. Nobody slept in the same bed.
I've been here yet.
You know, they slowly infiltrate these ideas into our society to move the society more to the left. And I really would encourage you to go to, just type in like the communist list or government
I've seen
communist
the
list.
53 points or whatever it is.
Have you seen that? Okay, because
David
if you look at that,
yeah.
It's like a slow infiltration and what they have to do. And if you go and study Gramsci, who is a socialist, in order to bring the West down, they have to do away with our morality and our Christian faith and our Christian belief. And that is today why we as Christians are mocked and ridiculed. And like Thomas has said, I'm blogging, I'm being really nice. You know, I'm just saying, well, I don't agree with that. And you're just a racist and you're a bigot. And it's like, no, I'm not a racist or a bigot. You know, I just don't happen to believe that way. And, you know, I don't, like I said, I've cared for people who have been homosexuals who, you know, had AIDS and were dying back before they had the drugs that they could actually fix this with. And you know, I didn't feel any different about that. But, you know, but I get called these names and I get ridiculed. And my children are being forced to listen to this. It's being taught as, you know, as if it's fact. And it goes the same thing with creationism versus the theory of
evolution.
You know, there it's a theory. And yet they want to teach it as rock solid science. But it's not a rock solid science. And so but it all goes back to that list. And if you look through that list, you know, infiltrating the education system, getting rid of our Bibles, replacing our moral religion with a social religion, it's all on that list. And this ought to make everybody, this is what they're after. And if you watch what's going on, you read that list and where it says the UN will be the power. Look at all the things that the NAACP was taking a lawsuit to the UN, okay? This stuff ought to scare people because what it is, it's threatening the sovereignty of the United States. And that's kind of why we're here today on this radio shows that we're doing, just trying to get
right.
this message out because the mainstream media is not going to tell you this stuff. In fact, you know, Congressman in Florida, Alan West, comes out and says there's 80 communists in the Congress, and he is ridiculed. He's banned from an NAACP. But go on the internet and type in. It's in September of 2010. The Communist Party sued the Democratic Party for stealing their platform. You know, and if you go to that list and you read that list, and you apply that to which party that it does apply, you will see who's pushing what and who's pushing what
and
agenda.
And it comes down to. Like I always say about my father-in-law, when he first said he used to go to Occidental College, and when he was at Occidental, he ended up he joined environmentalist list or group, and he didn't join it. He was going to join groups on, you know, registration day. I don't know if you're in college, Corey, but you know how when you go and there's certain groups you can join up, and one day they were protesting as communists. And then the next day, after they got nobody following them, back in the 40s, 50s, whenever he was a college student, I think it might have been the early 60s. But they put on new shirts that say Save the Trees and call themselves environmentalists. And guess what? They got all kinds of followers then.
Right. So, you know, it's more about the whole agenda and the whole attack on religion in this country, and the whole attack on religion is the bottom line.
The whole attack is our country. They're attacking our country.
They are
attacking
our country.
It's our sovereignty. We can't be a sovereign nation
and
we're a secular nation.
We've decided we're not going to be silent about it anymore because I feel strongly about the United States, and I've always been proud to be an American, and I've always been proud to defend America. And what's going on in America today is, especially at the levels of government, especially the Senate and the presidency, is not in the best interests of our country as a whole. And that's scary to me. You know, that's scary
it
to me that it might not be there for you.
May
and my children.
Which
go
presidential
ahead.
Candidates you two support or like?
Oh,
or like,
well,
at the moment,
we were
nobody.
We were Herman Cain supporters, okay,
mm-hmm.
Before he was forced out by the liberal media with these invalid accusations that were flying, which is just angered us both. And then we were a Rick Santorum supporters. And now we're not. I'm voting for Rick in Indiana because I can't get behind Gingrich because he's a progressive. I mean, he sat on a couch with Nancy Pelosi about global warming, the communist and socialist agenda. They use the women's rights groups, the feminists, push their agenda. They use the environmentalists, and they're doing this deliberately to hurt our jobs here in this country because, you know what, China's not doing anything to cap their carbon, and yet how many jobs are we losing because of the EPA? And that's deliberate because if you ruin our economy, you know, then you're going to ruin our country. So that's a deliberate thing that they are doing.
Quite honestly, I say a lot of it is because of – and this is going to sound like a whacked out idea, but it's George Soros. And George Soros has wanted us to fail as a country. We have always been number one. Everybody in America that I ever knew before President Obama took office, always said America is number one. America's the best. We are the great power, you know, the superpower. Go ahead.
So you did support Rick Santorum. You can't support Newt. And I didn't vote for him. But what do you think about Ron Paul?
No, he's not. He's actually Ron Paul is. So,
there's only one thing I don't like about Ron Paul. There is only one thing, and that is his audacity against Israel. I think Israel deserves and should be recognized in. As an enemy of so many other nations, as someone we will never, ever, ever isolate ourselves from. And he has said many times that Israel doesn't deserve our support, and I don't agree with that. And that's the one thing. I agree with, and the Fed, I agree with many of his economic policies. I think he's a great economist, and I think he's a wonderful doctor.
Good. Here's what my opinion on the Israel thing is, and I'll make it quick. Where he stands on Israel is that he doesn't oppose Israel. He's not one of these people who's, you know, free Palestine, one of these liberal people. He basically says, leave it up to them, because Israel does have their own nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm.
They do have the capability of protecting themselves. And it's sad, but the current Prime Minister of Israel did actually call the United States people in the United States who support Israel fools. And look, Israel has the right to defend itself, and I support Israel.
Yes, but it
over
can't defend
else.
Itself without our help because it cannot get into Iran to bust the nuclear weapon they're building without our support. They don't have the capability to do that. They need us standing by them as a friend, okay, because they do not have the jets to refuel their jets in air. They need our cooperation because we provide the refueling planes. So we cannot just totally turn our back on them, and we need to stand by them as we need to stand by all of our allies because that we are what stands behind total chaos in this world and takeover by the socialists who want world power, one world power. The only thing that stands that stands in the path of that at this point is the United States of America. And we cannot, by any means, chance, or whatever, you know, think that we can just pull into ourselves and isolate ourselves and everything's going to be okay. It's not going to work. We can't do that. And Israel cannot actually defend themselves. They don't have a way to get to the they don't have the bunker busting bombs that we have that they may need in Iran. Okay, they can't do it. And Iran with a nuclear weapon is scary to even the Arab countries. Okay, not to mention they've threatened to wipe Israel off the face of the earth and the United States. And if we pull out of Israel, guess who's going in there to get our technology that we have provided them with? Because we're the ones that support them with money. It's going to be China and Russia. Let's look at where Russia has come down on in the side of the Syria thing and who they're warning to stay out of Syria. Russia has sided with the Syrian government against the United States and has threatened the United States if we take any action in Syria. So to think that there aren't powers out there just waiting for us to drop Israel so they can get some more technology and weapons that Israel has for their use, like China and Russia, that is naive and it's irresponsible. And here's another reason I don't like Ron Paul. I'm sorry. Abortion has always been my voting issue since I was a teenager, because no matter what, that is a baby, and you don't kill babies. I'm sorry. I saw my daughter at 12 weeks.
You do know he is opposed to abortion, right?
No, he says he is, but then he says
he is, but he is pro.
He's
pro that date rights on it.
And because now he's going to send it back to the states, and you know states like California and New York are going to okay these abortions because they're so liberal. And the problem is that the Supreme Court butted its nose in once more where it didn't belong. And made this ruling, Roe versus Wade. And so the federal government has to take care of this problem. You can't just send it back to the states.
He has attempted to make abortion illegal. He's one of the few. He's one of the few presidential candidates who has, other than Rick Santorum. He actually, in the House, introduced a bill that defines life as starting at conception. It's the one issue that he actually does believe the federal. And look, I'm not a really big supporter. I didn't vote for him, but I hate to see people, because the media hasn't fairly represented him like a lot of the other candidates. And the abortion is the one issue where he thinks federal government should be involved. Because I did watch all of the debates, and the issue did come up a few times. And he was one of the
I agree with the abortion issue too, what Brenda said. Abortion is my biggest thing, and I know that Ron Paul is anti-abortion, pro-life completely on his own end, yet he promotes that people have the choice at the same time. So it's almost like he's talking out of both sides of his mouth about it at times. I understand where he's coming from. I do. I've read some of his emails, and you got to really read through them to get the context as at the end most of the time. And to understand where he's coming from, because most of his emails sit here and say pro-choice, 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 but then his very last line will say, I'm really pro-life. And it just doesn't match very well at the same
time. His policy doesn't follow the line. But also, Corey, I actually was reading some of his emails, and they were very mean.
Vitriolic. Very vitriolic.
Yes, against Rick Santorum. And beyond the need to be. They didn't need to be like that. He wasn't promoting himself. He was downgrading other opponents. And Mitt Romney does the same thing, which is why I don't like Mitt, but I will vote for Mitt if he's the nominee, because I think our country's in danger. But they were horrible. And, you know, I'm sorry, but a man that sends out that kind of message – to me, is not fit to be my president. So, you know, that's just my view.
It's interesting because from the very beginning of at most we had 9 candidates in this race at some point.
Yeah.
Rick Santorum, believe it or not, was my least favorite of them all. And he talks, the way he talks is good. But if you go back and look at his voting record in the Senate, he was part of the spending problem.
But that's distorted. And since
this is a different thing. You have to go back to the time when it happened, though. Right now, if he were in the Senate, he wouldn't be voting that way, and he's made that clear.
There was still a deficit then when he was voting for these things.
Yeah, well,
yes,
there was
voting.
No, actually, that's when they were balancing the budgets. But
it's not 2004.
But
no. Back in the time when Newt Gingrich was a speaker.
Here's the thing, Corey. He did admit he got a new perspective being out of Washington. So that was one thing. But also some of that was party line that he was voting. So, and that was the thing to do at the time. But you know,
the biggest thing he did,
you have to look at the character of the man. And when you look at his character, you really can't fault his character and his beliefs. Everything he says comes from the heart and from what he believes as a man. And that's the difference. But, you know,
the thing I saw with Santorum that was more, which was different than everyone else, and this is why I did like him from the beginning, but I liked Herman Cain more. And I liked Herman Cain more because Herman Cain I actually met when I was young, when I was younger than you are right now, Corey. And when I met Herman Cain, you just knew he was a change. He was a game changer. If something was failing, because I worked for Green Giant, and he was a part of Pillsbury, and he came into Green Giant, and he switched it around. Green Giant was failing. They were about to go under. And he came in, and immediately things turned around as soon as he got in the door. I mean, by my next paycheck, everything was better. And we didn't have to worry about possibly losing our jobs or anything. So
I
knew Herman Cain was a game changer.
Go ahead. I like Herman Cain. See, the way I vote is based off track record and the way they voted or the things they've done, not the things
they
say.
Right, but he wasn't a vote.
Yeah.
That was
but
another thing I found appealing about him. He didn't have votes to analyze.
But
he was someone
His business background is his record. He has a record in business. Okay, Rick Santorum is the one candidate who the whole time, in my opinion, didn't have that. He doesn't have any history running a business. He has a small. He's a self-employed now, but
he's a lawyer.
He has the practical common sense of being an everyday man working and coaching Little League for his sons, like I would do as when I was younger and my children were older than Billy, but he's an everyday guy. He did his own taxes. He has a scope on reality. He actually has the foreign policy experience because he served on the Senate Arms Committee. He's a leader because he fought the fight for the partial abortion ban, which, my God, I couldn't stand to look at President Clinton because I couldn't believe that they would suck brains out of a baby and then deliver it and call that humane and call that, that's a woman's choice. And he fought that with the Gang of Seven. He fought corruption in Washington. So there's a lot of good things in Rick Santorum's record that were overlooked. And just because it was a political season and they try to make it look as bad as it can be. You know, he had some really good ideas as far as the economy and jobs.
Well,
and
before I give it back to Corey, I want to just say the two things about Santorum I liked the most were, one, he did not make his decisions based on popular opinion. He did it out of principle. His decisions, his votes, were cast in the name of Pennsylvania. They weren't cast in the name of Rick Santorum.
Right.
That's where people can't draw the distinction of a line. They can't see, well, why would he vote for this? He was doing it because it was pro-Pennsylvania, not pro his own principles. It was pro-Pennsylvania. Almost every choice he made. But then when it came down to it, in the primary, he was the only one courageous enough to talk social issues, to actually address issues. He was not Mitt Romney who says, I don't want to talk about that. He was someone who said, sure, let's talk about it. And that's what I liked about him.
The social issues, if you're a Republican and that's what those are the issues that you focus on, that's good. But when you get to the general election and you have to convince Democrats, independents, because you can't win unless you convince independents,
right.
And some
Democrats. Here's the problem. Okay, the only time that a conservative has ran and beat an incumbent president was when they ran Reagan in 1980. And if you go look at the news articles, the Republican establishment didn't want Reagan. They said he was too conservative. Okay,
yes,
because you know what that brings out, Corey? That brings out the base of the Republican Party who right now are not going to go out and vote for Mitt Romney unless we can
do
something drastic.
That's why turnout is so low in the primary.
His extreme conservatism, though, was on the fiscal side. He didn't talk as much about the social issues. He might have had those views.
He did not want social medicine. He made that clear. He made it clear that he was pro-life.
That's not a social issue.
Socialized medicine is a social issue, but here, let me play a clip. No. Let me play a clip for you.
Back in 1927, an American socialist, Norman Thomas, 6 times candidate for president on the Socialist Party ticket, said the American people would never vote for socialism. But he said under the name of liberalism, the American people will adopt every fragment of the socialist program. There are many ways in which our government has invaded the precincts of private citizens, the method of earning a living. Our government is in business to the extent of owning more than 19,000 businesses covering 47 different lines of activity. This amounts to a fifth of the total industrial capacity of the United States. But at the moment, I'd like to talk about another way, because this threat is with us and at the moment is more imminent. One of the traditional methods of imposing statism or socialism on a people has been by way of medicine. It's very easy to disguise a medical program as a humanitarian project. Most people are a little reluctant to oppose anything that suggests medical care for people who possibly can't afford it. Now, the American people, if you put it to them about socialized medicine and gave them a chance to choose, would unhesitatingly vote against it. We had an example of this under the Truman administration. It was proposed that we have a compulsory health insurance program for all people in the United States, and of course, the American people unhesitatingly rejected this. So, with the American people on record as not wanting socialized medicine, Congressman Farrand introduced the Farrand Bill. This was the idea that all people of Social Security age should be brought under a program of compulsory health insurance. Now, this would not only be our senior citizens, this would be the dependents and those who are disabled. This would be young people if they are dependents of someone eligible for Social Security. Now, Congressman Farrand brought the program out on that idea of just for that particular group of people. But Congressman Farrand was subscribing to this foot-in-the-door philosophy because he said, if we can only break through and get our foot inside the door, then we can expand the program after that.
Yeah, you see, this is in 1964, Corey. That was 1964.
I want to hear him.
Yeah, go ahead.
Right before we started listening to that, when I talk about fiscal issues, I'm talking about, you know, the so-called universal health care, government spending, and then social issues, as far as I'm concerned, are same-sex marriage, abortion, stem cell research, you know, those things.
Which, same-sex marriage has no business in the government, period. I mean, it shouldn't be there.
I'm not arguing that, right? I'm just saying, I'm just trying to, as a matter of terms,
clarify,
things in the category. I was just going to ask your opinion. That clip, what's your opinion of what do you think of Medicare? Now let me first clarify, I am a fiscal conservative. I'm a social nothing as far as I'm concerned. Fiscal conservative is what I consider myself.
And at your age that's not unnormal because younger people tend to be more
right. If you go back to Woodrow Wilson, you've got to be a liberal when you're young to have a heart, and you got to be a conservative when you're older in order to have brains.
I consider myself a conservative, and at worst, I consider myself a libertarian, but I'm not a liberal.
Right.
I've never called myself that, and I won't. But anyway, I think I said what that had to do with socialized medicine. What's your opinion of I guess Medicare or something like Medicare.
Well, my
Medicaid
opinion of Medicare is that I'm never going to see a dime that I put into it.
Mm-hmm.
Never.
That's right.
I mean, 20 years from now, when
it's
I am
broken.
Old enough, I will never see a dime of it. That's my opinion. But I've put
okay.
in enough to support a lot of people who are right now collecting it. You know,
yeah.
I've put in over the last 22 years that I worked,
right.
you know, quite a bit.
Promises were made with this program, okay? It is going to go broke. It has to be
yep.
fixed. The only way to fix it is to overhaul it. But you can't do anything for people 55 and older. You need to maintain the status quo. But it needs
I
to
just want my money
and
back,
and
I want to invest
it
my way.
They tried
the
to fix
to
it
fix
under the Bush
in
administration.
Get rid of it.
Well, yeah. And
because
right. that's what I mean. I want my
opinion,
money back, and I want them to get rid of it.
In my opinion, you can't say you oppose socialized medicine and then at the same time say that we should continue Medicare because it is socialized medicine.
Right.
And that was back in 1964. So that was quite a few years ago. And look, here it is, 2012. We're talking about the same thing. You know, it's kind of
because it's going bankrupt.
It's not because right and wrong doesn't change, and the way the government should run doesn't change. And yet they're trying to change it. You know, they're trying to change it. They're trying to push this big. I'm an RN. Socialized medicine will be the worst thing, especially this plan. It's going to be the worst thing for America that we have ever seen. And the care for patients
when it
is going down the tubes. It's a bad, bad thing, and it's a fiscal
even class warfare. Right now, class warfare, when they say means test it, you know, like older people who can't afford it shouldn't be getting it. And personally, even Warren Buffett, God rest, you know, I shouldn't say God rest his soul, he's not dead, but God bless him.
Silly, what are you thinking?
Well, you know what, I was thinking of I just got my power back on, so I open up the page and I see Warren Buffett, and it's talking about his medical conditions that he just went through. But anyway, he almost, you know, anyway, the thing is, God bless him, he put a lot of Medicare payments in. That's his money. He has the right to get that much back. The first person who ever received Social Security ever put $20 into it and took out $20,000. And that alone should have given people the hindsight or the sight into this program.
Yeah,
saying,
but that's
guess
the problem.
What?
That's
Let
not
me,
the problem.
This,
okay,
I'm
going to
say something that's probably going to surprise you.
Go ahead. No, go ahead, Corey.
The last conservative president that we've had was Herbert Hoover. And the last decent president we've had was Ronald Reagan. The size of government has grown for decades. Even though Ronald Reagan pushed against it, its government still grew under him. He didn't want it to.
Oh, yeah, the debt went up.
Well,
right,
because you're
going up.
And I don't consider the last conservative presidential candidate to be nominated was Barry Goldwater in 1964. He was the last,
right.
as far as I'm concerned, the last conservative to be nominated.
Right, and that's what that
Bush
speech
was
all
really,
about. That was him promoting
that was a
Goldwater.
Promoting yep. Goldwater from Ronald Reagan, yes.
Yep.
So,
and then,
but
and then,
so we're on that. Yeah, go ahead.
You know, Bush, as far as I'm concerned, Bush and Obama are not even that different. They are just as bad.
They're equally cloaked on the opposite ends of the spectrum. One is,
well, I don't
you know,
even necessarily think they're on the opposite ends of the spectrum because if you look at Bush, he incrementally increased socialized medicine too with Medicare Part D,
yeah.
which is actually a bigger overhaul than it was I guess you could say it was politically, it was a more successful overhaul than Obamacare. And you know, it's just as bad.
Yeah, it's a bad. It's a bad thing on the system. Okay, but here's the problem: we have gotten so far away from where government should have been. Government is in the business of overregulating the drug companies to the point where seniors couldn't afford medicine, and that's where Medicare D came in.
They're overregulated
also,
to the point that medicine
wait.
Is running dry.
Right, but it also. For years, this is where the Republicans got to problems, they compromised with the Democrats to get things through. And in those compromises, you slowly get a little more government involved. And the problem right now we have is we have way too much government regulation. We have too much government in our lives. The government has the government responsibility to us as United States citizens is to secure our borders and our national security, which they have not done and they refuse to do. And the president's chief concern is to deal with foreign powers. He has no ability to do what Obama is doing now in domestic affairs. They have no business suing states. We are a republic, not a democracy, and we're supposed to, everything is supposed to go to the states that doesn't go to the government. And we are so far gone from there that they tried to fix these things. You know, the overregulation shot the drug prices up to where seniors couldn't afford their drugs, and so they tried to fix it with Medicare D. But also Bush, in his time in office, tried to implement private retirement funds to replace Social Security,
yes,
and the Democrats
shot it down. It was failed leadership. He didn't get it. No matter how much he believed in it, he failed and didn't get it through.
Well, because the Democrats shot it down.
And part of the reason that was shot down, though, is you got to go back to the 2004 election when Nancy Pelosi took over. Because Nancy Pelosi was stopping everything that was he had good in the spectrum. And that kind of stuff is why the whole idea of checks and balances isn't working anymore.
Right.
You can't have a Democrat in the office and Republican in, you know, led house or a Democrat house.
That's why it's always balanced out that way, because the people wanted the checks and balances. But what we've got right now, Corey, what the problem is that we have in this country is in Washington, D.C., there is an establishment. They don't want you to think there is, but there is an establishment, and it's the money and it's the corruptions. It's the politicians that need to go. We need to get the money out of Washington. Anytime you have that kind of money in one place, there is going to be corruption, greed, and somebody trying to take it from you. So what we need to do as citizens is, and the presidency is important because of the reasons, you know, if you read that list again, and this is why we're so strong on the social issues. Although Rick, when you listen to him speak, he didn't talk about social issues. He talked about jobs, energy, the economy, and Iran.
But he answered questions about social issues, and those were televised.
And he would answer the questions if they were asked, but the press made that out to be more than it was from him. And he was not going to, the only one he was going to actually do anything about basically was abortion, because as president, you can't actually, he knows that you can't make the laws. The laws have to come through Congress, unlike the current president in chief who thinks he can do whatever he wants to do.
He's got executive orders for everything.
I add that while Rick Santorum is socially conservative, he was willing to implement another government program to push those social. He voted for, I believe
Medicare
it was Title
D.
20. I can't remember which bill it was in. It was, but
yeah,
it was,
but yeah,
it was Title 20.
You're going back to a different time.
Promoting
abstinence
education. But the fact is,
right,
even if that's the right thing to teach, the federal government doesn't have the right,
right,
to get involved.
Right.
Okay.
And he would be the first to tell you that his eyes were opened when he left the government. He said the best thing that ever happened was when he lost his election, because he got to see the government from the outside world, because there is this culture in Washington. And this is what we the people have got to break up. And this is why we need to get out all the long-term politicians out of office. We need to get new people in there who are pledging to decrease the size of government and send the things back to the states where they belong and where it was originally intended. Now, it's not going to happen overnight. It can't happen overnight because it's such a mess that's been made.
But we have got to
go in that direction.
I'm skeptical that it can actually happen at all, and it's sad.
I know.
That,
I am.
Me too. I agree.
You're not the only
but
one, Corey.
The fact
I,
is,
okay,
and quite honestly,
have talked
Corey
about reducing the size of government for years, and we voted those people in who said they were going to do it, and then they didn't. And then So we said, okay, well, we now need to throw those people out, put more people in who will say they'll decrease the size of government, and then they get in and they don't do it. And so it just seems like a
very
cycle
frustrating
to me.
Yeah. I mean, I'm at a point, and I don't know if you were listening earlier when Michael was on, when he was talking about he's a state delegate in Texas, but he actually went to the convention there, and the Ron Paul supporters actually, what was the, I don't know what, it was something on the table about Israel and about our soldiers, and he and several other vets actually stood up and were able to stop this whatever it was. It wasn't a good thing. Michael's a good man, and he's a veteran. And whatever this platform that the Ron Paul supporters were trying to push through was not a patriotic platform. We have to stand up at some point, because at some point this is we're heading on a collision course, and unless, well, you know, God may choose to come again, but unless something desperate happens, you know, I can actually see that we could have an actual revolution here with the guns in this country, and it scares me. It scares me for my children and my grandchildren, because I have nine grandchildren. So go ahead.
The same thing Michael was talking about is what happened here in Iowa. When we put out our platform, part of our platform said, we will monetarily and militarily stand behind Israel. And those Ron Paul supporters got out there at our convention and said, oh, no, 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 we don't agree with this. And we said, well, then you can't be delegates, because this is what we stand for.
Yeah, so, but, you
on
know,
a different issue, we talk about the sort of disappointment with no one actually reducing the size of government. The one thing that we can try to do, even if government continues to grow, we can make sure that if it is growing, that we're putting restrictions on the power that they have. So even if the government takes up more of the GDP, which we don't want, but if they do, we still can at least slow the gain of power that they have. So there might be big bureaucracies, but they'll be less powerful. And that's something that I can see that we can do now.
But a lot of it, too, is getting education out there to people, Corey, because there's a lot of people that think this big government is great. They have no clue. I mean, it's really...
There is a difference between small government and limited government.
Right.
And we want both, but the more realistic one right now is limited government.
Right.
And then we work towards making it actually smaller.
It needs to be constitutional no matter
so
what.
You,
it needs to
right.
be that
yes, I
the
agree, but
national
we can't,
government.
It, you know,
you're not
it incrementally brought us to this point.
Right.
We're going to have to incrementally work our way backwards. We're not going to be able to just get rid of the huge
party system is a bad thing, and they knew this back in the day. Jefferson and some of the earlier founding fathers knew that a two-party system would not be good for this country because it polarizes, and they don't do the work of the people. They don't do the work of the people. They bicker among themselves, and we see what the GSA did with these lavish parties, and they just spend our money like it's nothing. And Billy and I, we're more than willing to pay more taxes once they quit wasting the money we're already sending to Washington. And this is a big problem I have with them wanting to raise taxes.
The thing is, though, if they stopped wasting it, you wouldn't have to pay more taxes because...
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly,
my point.
Exactly.
It's like
a circular reasoning there. The reasoning
The spending is probably going to continue to increase, even though it shouldn't. But what we have to focus on now is limiting the power of government. And then at the same time, short term, we need to look at limiting the power of government. Long term, we need to look at making government smaller.
Yes, and just
right.
and we can do that by going by the Constitution. All you got to do is quit reading things into the Constitution. But this comes back to the Supreme Court, which we need to get constitutionally conservative judges on that Supreme Court, because you don't want people making laws because they feel, oh, well, we feel like, you know, this is an outdated document,
Interesting point I want to make. I think you said something about it earlier. Young people tend not to be conservative. A lot of them aren't. And I think we should present ourselves more as we're still conservatives, but we use that word less, use the word constitutional, limited government, freedom, liberty, young people are more attracted to those.
To that kind of thing.
That language. Conservative, at least, you know, among young people, conservative conjures up an image of, you know, old men with cigars and top hats sitting around in a circle talking and huffing and puffing, which isn't what it is, but that's what young people, you
that's
know, when
true.
You
it's
hear
a
the
connotation word in their mind. You know, you say the word and, you know, there it is.
Yeah.
Oh, these
and,
are the
yeah.
old white people.
Well, see, this is the biggest difference between liberals and conservatives is one person, one conservative can say something that is controversial. Like there's this guy down in one of the southern states and he put, I do not support the blank in office as a sign right in front of his business. And he used that racial slur that, I mean, I can't even say, but, and I never would because when I was little, I was taught, you know, that's not a nice word. It's a mean word for a black person. And when it comes down to it, when one conservative says something like that, it's all over. And everybody says, this is what the conservative party is all about. But a liberal coming out and saying evil things about, you know, our religions or even gun rights. You know, I am very pro Second Amendment, and they say something, and it's muted, or if they say hateful stuff, it's totally muted and it's never even heard from.
The interesting thing about the word liberal is, if you know anything about European politics, liberal actually means in Europe, liberals are basically what conservatives are here. They're
right.
pro-gun rights. They're pro-free. See, that's where, you know, liberal comes from the word liberty.
That's funny.
And,
yeah.
But then
yeah.
for some reason here, what liberals are here are socialists in other countries. But for
right.
here, in other countries, conservatives are the liberals.
Just
and,
like what Reagan
said. Conservative is
right.
used in other
See,
countries.
If you use
and,
the word socialist here, it scares people like Reagan said in his clip, and that's why they use liberalism.
Well, that's
because
treason is no more... is never prosecuted anymore. I don't know why, but you'd think
what
it
is,
would
sorry,
be.
Say that again. I didn't get that last. What isn't prosecuted?
Treason.
Treason.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody prosecutes for treason and hatred for our country. Everyone says they have a right because it's free speech now. And it
well,
always
I
have
no,
been
I,
free
if someone
speech.
Believes in socialism, if that's what they believe, I think they have, you know, that's what they believe. I say, even
but when
if it's
it comes
a,
to trying to take down our government or take down our country into something it's not, and rewrite our constitution the way they do, it's to me that's treasonous. I don't know if that's
see,
not or
me,
if I'm
even if
defining
I philosophically
treason
completely
incorrectly.
Disagree with someone, I welcome their arguments to the
right.
the table. And I will debate you. I don't care
yes.
if you're the farthest. If you consider yourself a socialist or a
right.
communist, even because there
no,
is
no, no,
no.
I'm
still,
just talking
yeah,
about those
and I agree.
Activists
I agree, but...
against the Constitution. Those who say we don't have a Constitution. This isn't what the constitutional means. We need to
mm-hmm.
add more to it or rewrite it to mean this. And
I suppose
me,
we'll always have the debates about interpretation. Even
right.
among conservatives, we'll have debates about interpretation.
Right.
Yeah.
But
interpretation
what we know
one
it
thing,
tells us is that the government
changing
is supposed to be small and it has limited duties, and the state rights are actually where, you know, there should be more power in each state. And then you have competition. You know, then you have the competition among the states to provide, because they want people to come live there. You know, so it's actually a better system. And, you know, with the government just basically kind of overseeing, you know, they have to oversee national security and that kind of thing. They just, that's, they need
But what I'm getting
that,
at
that,
is,
that.
What I'm getting at is the Supreme Court. Okay, we've got judges on the Supreme Court who basically say this isn't what the Constitution means.
Yeah, right.
Like Elena Kagan, like Sotomayor, like, you know, they say, this is what we have to do to the Constitution to make things like gay rights recognized, to make abortion Roe v. Wade. Roe v. Wade was totally the worst decision ever by the Supreme Court. But to me, what I was trying to get at, I guess, is I was calling that kind of activism on the Supreme Court in the opposite direction of our Constitution as a bit of treasonous. You know what I'm saying? Where it comes down to it that it redefines what our country's all about when they make those kind of decisions.
Right.
Or, like, even when we've got the president out there saying that, isn't it the conservative party that's against activist judges? Yes, we are. We're against activist judges that sit here and rewrite laws and say, okay, now Iowa's a pro-gay marriage state because three judges decided to marry gay couples. Then when they do that kind of stuff, that redefines the whole state.
Right.
Just like that redefines the whole Constitution.
And that issue.
Sure, we'll do that.
Let's go back to that issue, because in California, the people spoke. The people said no gay marriage. And what did they do? And this is another problem in this country. They immediately sued to take it to the court system, overruling the will of the people. Okay?
And we, the people, are supposed
to be what drives this country, you know, and our will, and we're not being listened to in Washington. But, yeah, lawsuits in this country are a huge problem.
I would agree that when it comes to lawsuits, it can be overdone, but it's definitely a better way to settle problems than violent, you know, the violence you see in other nations.
Right, absolutely, but I think we're coming to that, because
Occupy.
Trayvon
Look at
Martin
what happened with Occupy.
Well, not just Occupy, but Trayvon Martin. There's been 5 beatings of white people, and that were racially motivated by this case, because the president and several black leaders chose to make this a case about race. And there have been 5 documented cases that they were doing in the name of Trayvon Martin. When the news media deliberately edited tapes to feed the people falsehoods about what actually occurred on that night, and this scares me, because there's a whole group, Corey, and I don't know if you know this, but you know, Saul Alinsky believed in organizing at the bottom, going into the poor communities, and you kind of get into their churches and their people, and you make friends with them, and you slowly get your philosophy in there. Well. This philosophy,
it's the ant versus the grasshopper theory.
Yes, this philosophy is that the rich people are bad people, the white man, or in this case, in black and white, the white people are bad people, and we have to rise up against them. Okay, and this is a Saul Alinsky thing. This is Marxism at its latest. And, of course, Saul Alinsky called his leaders, community organizers. And guess what Barack Obama did in Chicago? You know, he was a community organizer. I mean, it all kind of ties into this what they're trying to do to our country. But they stir this up. And people like Herman Cain, they call him names. And maybe one of the best things that could have happened was for the media to go after him with white women, because it made some of the liberal blacks think, well, maybe the Democrats don't have my best interests, because we didn't see Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton running to his defense because he was a black man. You see, because they didn't do that, because it didn't suit their cause, you know, because he was a black man who was a conservative. And we see this a lot. We have Thomas Sowell. We have Dr. Alveda King. These people get ridiculed and called names, and just because they have conservative views, even though they're black. And it's a philosophy that's being taught on a lower level. And it scares me in this country.
Well,
the
biggest part of it was the fact that there were actual death threats made. I mean, they put a bounty on the guy's head.
What's being done about that?
George Zimmerman, they had a bounty out. And, I mean, it was basically wanted dead or alive.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still doing it, actually.
Yeah,
I mean, he's already arrested and everything. But the fact is, none of that kind of stuff got any publicity on mainstream medias. that kind of stuff
mind.
Was not.
Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Corey.
Well, what I was basically saying is that those kind of things, I mean, were done by the Black Panthers, by hate groups in my book. Those are hate groups. I don't see them as love groups at all.
Yeah. There's another issue. This is a completely different issue, but I'm sitting here at my computer reading about it as we're talking. I just saw it come up. I'm not a social conservative, so you can probably guess what I think about this. But there's a – Pat Robertson a few days ago said that he would actually support some form of drug decriminalization. And so I was wondering, as social conservatives, what is your view on that?
How about as a medical professional, as a mother?
Would
you like that view? I don't think we should legalize drugs, you know, and I try to teach people not to drink either because I think alcohol is a bad thing and tobacco is a horrible thing.
I agree that drugs are, I mean, drugs are not good for society, but the way to approach it maybe would be as a medical issue instead of just a criminal issue, if you understand what I'm saying.
Right. I'm looking at it as a judgment issue.
But that's the whole thing that got us into paying for addicts to have Medicare money.
I'm not suggesting that the government provide aid. I'm simply saying that we change our attitude towards it from a criminal attitude. You know, instead of looking at them as just criminals, we look at them as someone who has a health problem as well,
I
don't think you should ever legalize it, because once you legalize something, then everybody thinks it's okay and more people do it, and it's not a healthy thing to do.
Well, see, where I might disagree a little bit. I think that a lot of people look at marijuana. Some people do it just because they're not supposed to do it. It's illegal, and they get some weird thrill out of doing something that's illegal. Whereas alcohol, it's regulated. It's not
taboo. We have
a
of it everywhere. We have kids drinking it still.
The thing is, though, we have kids can get marijuana easier than they can get alcohol. It's easier for them to get that than it is alcohol, because if to get alcohol, you have to walk into a store and show an ID, which means you have to find someone who has an ID. Whereas marijuana, there's no regulation. Anyone can get it, and it's not hard to find people with it.
But again, I think it comes back to you got parental responsibilities, and of course we went through the 60s generation where the parents really didn't they were smoking the marijuana too. I mean, okay, so we went through a time, but it comes to a parental responsibility, and you know I know those drugs are out there, but you know I've taught my kids about it from day one, and some of mine have probably tried it, and I know some of them have, you know, but they don't have a drug problem. But it's the same thing with cigarettes, you know. I'm a cancer nurse, so cigarette smoking is a bad thing, you know.
But you would agree that making it illegal probably wouldn't necessarily help the problem. It would just create a criminal problem as well for those people who are doing it.
Well, for cigarettes, yes. Yeah, I would agree with that. But I do everything I can to teach about the dangers of smoking, because I'm going to tell you, I watch people die every day.
I'm not saying
I watch
not people
from,
of course
from,
it's,
but
it's,
yeah.
Of course, any drug is dangerous from alcohol. Well, from, you know, caffeine is technically can be considered a drug. And, you know, from caffeine to the worst drugs you can think of, they're all unhealthy. But the way to deal with it isn't necessarily
the only thing I think about legalizing drugs is on an economic basis. Okay, mm-hmm. as far as the economic value of legalizing it, I see that as a beneficial to economy. However, the bigger point is the judgment issue. It's a judgment issue about making those things more available to people who are already abusing them. And if you make them legally available, like marijuana, as just one thing, people will, in my book, I don't know, I mean, everyone always brings up Holland and the Netherlands about it, about how legal it's legal there and it works fine. But I see how I've been a survivor of a very abusive, highly drugged dealing stepfather who ended up actually getting deported because he was from Jamaica. But anyway, I've seen the worst of the worst parts of it, I think. And I don't think that we need society to have any of those parts in it on a regular basis. And legalizing it, I think we'd see more of those areas.
Yeah, and I'm going to quickly add in here, if we went with a religious perspective, absolutely not. But, you know, I'm pretty conservative in my views biblically. But here, I'm going to bring Thomas back in because he's got something to say about this. So hang on a second. Hey,
okay.
Thomas. That is you, Thomas?
Not if you picked up 111.
Oh, I'm sorry. 111. Who do I have at 111? That's usually Thomas. I'm sorry. Who do I have there?
No, my name isn't Thomas. I just wanted to call in because I heard you guys talking about legalization of marijuana, and I think that if you legalize anything that has a great demand for it, it'll reduce certainly the crime element.
Yeah,
it
does reduce that.
Well, obviously, because if you take it from being illegal to legal, that makes it not a crime. So the crime is definitely not there.
You have a harder part keeping your kids away from it if it's legal.
Well, not if I have good parental
advice. Supervision, yeah.
Well, that's a whole other topic in this country today.
Well, that's true. But the parents have the responsibility of
Here's another example.
That's one of our great responsibilities, though.
You sound very familiar to me. What's your name? Because I think you've called us before.
No, I haven't called you before.
Oh, no, you haven't? Okay.
No, my name's Joe.
Can I add something to that parental sort of thing? You talked about the parental, the parenting part of it, and that if making it legal will kind of nullify the parents' ability to prevent kids from participating in that. Take something like violent video games. You know, most parents don't want their young children, you know, anywhere near a violent video game, but we wouldn't just make it illegal because there are that just making
there's
something
grades on it. There's the parental rating.
Yes, but it's not. That's done by an independent group. It's not a government group, and the point I'm trying to make is that making something illegal isn't necessarily the way to prevent it. It has to be an attitude and
it goes back
culture.
To the parents.
Yes. Yes.
Because what you're saying is that even if the parents don't want the kids to play video games, they may play them anyway. But look, you can mold your children. Anybody who cannot mold their children while they have them from the time they're born to the time they go to first grade or kindergarten is a lousy parent. And if that offends people, that's too bad. You are not just you. I'm talking about the generic you.
Right,
people have
right.
kids, mothers and fathers, both. They have to mold their kids so that they listen to the fathers and the mothers. And the fathers and the mothers themselves have to have morals, and they have to have values, and they have to have some modicum of brains. But if they don't, they have to.
Well, you just hit it on the head
true.
There.
It's
they
true.
Have
I understand where he's coming from.
And we have a lot of people in this country that have none of the above.
And that's why we're in the mess we're in.
I know. That's a problem. And how do you fix it?
When I hear you say stuff like that, I think back to a panel I saw of teachers and parents where the teacher actually had the audacity to tell the parent, I know your child better than you do. But
in some instances, that might even be true.
The person that's involved in politics who also relates to the parenting issue, who's marginalized, but who is actually, her views are not extreme or anything. And I always have trouble saying her name, but her name is Phyllis Schlafly, I think.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, she was,
Well, her views are not extreme or anything. And she talks about the parenting issues, that it's not just law of parenting and how you teach teach your kids about the things that they're going to encounter.
Everything.
And then they can,
everything.
There's two choices. They can make the, you know, if it's drugs, they can make the choice to do the drugs or not do the drugs. Or if it's, you know, based on your values, if it's the premarital sex, they can make the decision to do it or to not do it. And their choice is their choice, and they have to live with it. But it's about teaching them teaching beliefs. And
it's about teaching kids morals and values, yes, and that, and making them realize that it is their choice. But the parents have to inculcate within their kids the fact that the parents are supposed to love those children no matter what, and they're supposed to teach those kids individual responsibility. So if you teach them that and you say, go ahead, look, if you want to try drugs, I'm not going to stop you because I can't. But don't take drugs just to be part of the crowd. If you like it, okay, because, you know, you might like it. But how many people do you know who smoke marijuana have actually had any car accidents? I don't think of many.
I do.
Far.
Actually,
when I was about 13 years old,
I was in the car with my stepdad when he had an accident.
There was a lady friend of mine who was killed by a carload of people who were high, and she was pregnant, and I was like 13 years old. They crossed the center line, hit her head on, killed her.
And at the same time, I would never suggest that it would be legal to drive. And I mean, it would still be illegal to drive under the influence of, you can't drive
any
while
kind
you're
of
talking.
Drug. I think we don't have a breathalyzer for marijuana high.
But it's coming close to it where you won't be able to start your car unless you actually exhale into a breathalyzer. So
right.
The government's getting that
which
restrictive,
is, that,
and you don't
which,
need that.
Yeah, which is bad. That's
yeah.
wrong. I mean, it comes back, it needs to be the parents, you know, not the schools, not the government, but the parents. Need to be teaching their children about every issue, you know.
And
but see, that's where they're coming from about legalizing
drugs,
with Brenda.
Drinking,
and the
you
parents,
know, everything. Yes.
The What's parents that? Are going to have, see, the schools have one view. The parents are going to have different views when it comes to drugs. Hopefully no parent would say, go ahead and do drugs. But when it comes to premarital sex or dealing with that issue or whatever the issue is, other than, I'd say, drugs or the basic things that you would sign up to, there's going to be different views, and that's how America was. And now we've got schools trying to implement one view. Okay, so there used to be sort of a diversity.
Well, it's not even the schools. The schools are only doing anything that they can by approval of the government. It's the government that's sticking their nose in.
Well, it's interesting.
Right.
It's interesting because this is the schools is something that I'd like to see ended. I'm very young, but I'm actually was just elected to my county board of education, and I've been serving on the board for a few months now, and luckily the county I'm in, the stuff that you talk about this indoctrination, it doesn't happen as much here as it does in some other places. I've been in the schools to observe teachers, and it's...
Do you have any approval over the textbooks?
The school board, generally you'd find this the same way across the country. The school board approves a list of all books before the school year starts, not just textbooks, but all literature, and everything. And one of our board members, we just approved this textbook list.
I think it comes from Texas, that the general textbooks for high schools, they have to be originated from or approved by, an accredited service in Texas, if I'm not mistaken, and then maybe you guys can take the list from them. The thing is, the textbooks have to be approved by by some government agency.
The county school boards do that, and we generally, how it works is we go out and look for textbooks, and government, at least some government. I don't know about the federal government with all their weight, but we do look for the low bidders.
I don't think you have as much freedom as you believe, because if you're going to study for standardized tests, and if you want to be in any program which is funded by the government, you have to have textbooks which have to fit that criteria. You can't just find a textbook, you know, that's written by Mickey
Mouse.
Generally, though,
if you go out and find a physics textbook, it will usually, a general physics textbook will cover the things that will be covered on a general physics
textbook. Right, and for that textbook to be considered a textbook, it has to be approved by some government agency. All this is
done by approved by the local school board, because any of the books that are used in math in the schools are approved by us. And the ones that are already approved, we don't have to reapprove them. We approve the new ones every year. And
I'd just like to know about the history books, if you're given the right history.
It's a problem. Okay, guys. Well, hey, quickly, we're going to be running out of time. I want to thank you, Corey, for calling in and stirring up some very interesting conversation. And thank you, Joe, for calling in.
All right.
We appreciate all you calling in. We're on every Tuesday night from 9 to 11 Eastern. Billy also has a show on
Thursdays. And
you should
listen to the Abomination on Fridays.
She welcomes callers, and we do this kind of thing. We just go from subject to subject and get opinions and get what everybody thinks, get it out there to the people. And I think what Joe's trying to say is that in some of those textbooks, there's things that really aren't accurate in those textbooks as far
nice
as American
thing about
history
what we do
and
with
different
the textbooks
things,
here in Howard County. I'll just say this real quick. We actually put them on public display for 2 weeks before we approved them. At the front of our Department of Education, you can come in and you can look through the textbooks. Usually we don't get any complaints, and if we do, they're handled. If there's something, I personally do a little bit of research on every book that we approve, and I have objected to a few. Usually it has to do with rule of law issues or something like that, and, you know, if it's. But anyway, thanks for having us.
But Corey, I love it. I love it when we got the younger generation involved and to be concerned about this country, because it is going to be your country that we're passing on, and that we need to. That's what we're working for today, is to try to get it back on the right track so that there is a country for our children and our grandchildren. Joe, thank you for your input. Feel free to call back anytime. Billy, it's been great. I'm going to take us out with a little music. Thank you all for tuning in.
Thank
we're here every Tuesday night. All right.
Bye-bye now.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again, just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today. But the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that fight to me, and I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. But there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston and New York to L.A., where there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say, there ain't no doubt I love this man. today. But there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Thanks everyone again for tuning in. Like I said, Women Patriots airs here every Tuesday night from 9 to 11 Eastern Time. Catch Obama Nation on Thursday and Friday nights, I believe it at 8 Eastern. Okay, we're done.